Accenalo. Two water. Meditation. As I come through here, I'm informed of a decision taken by members that as we get a report from the team auditor general that if team water and sanitation can excuse us. That's what I'm getting. As I'm hearing from one or two, I kept on asking a question. Are we sure? And then members are saying, yes, they are sure. We shall have to hear more when members are with the AG's office as to what informed that decision. But that's what members had felt. We have this has been our first meeting after recess, a short break. A number of things have been happening politically. To an extent, you even lose track because these political dynamics, they literally, this day and age, you know, happen on a daily basis. If it is not chairs flying in some provincial conference, it is the mayor and the mayoral committee member at each other's throats in Cape Town. It is also a UVM conference that takes place very smoothly, as if you were in a church, a priest preaching, everybody else attentively listening, being so quiet. Now, these are the kinds of times that we live in this political landscape we suddenly find ourselves in. It's as if 2019 is almost here, when it is going to be really happening. Hopes are high for others, and equally hopes are high for others. So it is that voter who shall have to determine as to whose hopes were indeed high. We have welcomed back members from that short recess. Against that background of all of those dynamics that have been ensuing over the past few days or weeks. We have a few apologies. Mr. Mguni cannot make it because he has other meetings within his committee, or rather list of committees that he attends, or he's deployed in. And also the Deputy Minister has sent us her apology. She is on medical leave. We have here a medical certificate to that effect and a letter of apology. Thanks for that. We then shall have to begin with our meeting. And our meeting has been circulated whose notice indicated that we shall have to entertain the report or the briefing by the AG's office. We did get an apology, having invited the team from National Treasury to come and before and brief us about the department, their own impressions. The National Treasury had apologized that they cannot make it. However, we do have the AG's office, they are here with us. And for that reason that we have the AG's office and not National Treasury, I was then of the view that if we finish earlier with the AG's office, if we can take the department on board, probably around 11 o'clock, depending on how far we go with the Auditor General's office. Okay, we just got a letter also of apology from the minister. Oh, sorry, no. This is the letter this is an apology from National Treasury. There is a very fundamental point here, something that we might wish to ponder with. This is a correspondence from the Minister of Finance. If I could just read, I'm sure members can get copies of this. It's an important note that for us going forward that we should also keep in mind. It will also have to take us back to our own understanding of what the National Treasury can or cannot do for purposes of our meeting and also for purposes of our work, empowering ourselves as we engage with the department on the outcomes, annual outcomes. Invitation to brief the Committee on Water and Sanitation, I'll just summarize it. As you are aware, the foundation of the PMFA is to allow managers to manage and then hold them accountable for their management decisions. Section 38, 39, 40 of the Act specifically deal with the responsibilities of accounting officers of national departments in relation to financial management, internal control and reporting. In terms of Section 40, Subsection 1 of PMFA, the accounting officer of a national department must keep full and proper record of the financial affairs of the department in accordance with the prescribed norms and standards as is responsible for the resolution of, and among others, all reports to Parliament. This is an important point. Given these responsibilities, it would be inappropriate of the National Treasury to report on Parliament on annual financial statements and annual reports of the Department of Water and Sanitation. Section 6 of PMFA requires that the National Treasury promote and enforce transparency and effective management in respect of revenue, expenditure and assets and liabilities of the department, public entities. And this is done through prescribing uniform norms and standards, uniform classification systems and prescribed standards of generally recognized accounting practices. What National Treasury in a nutshell is saying is that they report or brief, or rather they brief standing committee on appropriation on expenditure for all national votes on a quarterly basis. I think that's the essence of what National Treasury is saying. So necessarily, therefore, if we are to be taking any interest on what National Treasury has briefed Parliament about, it will have to be on the standing committee on appropriation, which they do periodically. So ours, therefore, will have to... ours will then have to take an interest insofar as the program of core is concerned, and integrate ours. And they indeed do prefer the set as core on matters, among others, that relate also to water and sanitation. So that's the essence of what National Treasury is saying, that they cannot see themselves coming here. They have one point of entry for Parliament in terms of reporting, among others. It is that Standing Committee on Appropriation. I hope and trust, members, of course, the National Treasury has been to our committee from time to time. Maybe it is out of those reflections that they have since done what they have done now. Okay, I hope that is better understood, members. However, there is on what is referred to as vote number 6, water and sanitation budget and expenditure summary, which I hope that the members do have copies of, which will inadvertently assist us in what we wanted from National Treasury. Okay, if that is clear, members, we shall then have to move forward with our meeting. Welcome back, all of those that have just arrived, Mam Kaula, from recess. And then we have made that request, Tim, water and sanitation, if you don't mind, and then we shall then have to call back as and when. Thank you. So they get to know who you are. if you don't mind. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Alice Miller. I'm a corporate executive in the office.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, other colleagues around. My name is Andries Segeto. I'm from the office of the AG. I'm the business executive responsible for, amongst others, the water and sanitation portfolio.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Stephen Fevedi from Auditor General. I'm the senior manager responsible for water treatment.
Want to attend her apology for Sherette Talia. She cannot attend today, but Stephen will take us through the detail of the briefing. We're going to share the briefing amongst ourselves, and we will not officially hand over, so we're just going to take the presentation when it gets to our section. Andries will start with the presentation.
Chair, we're starting with the presentation. No, thank you, Chair. First and foremost, Chair, the Chairperson, the members, let us take the opportunity to thank the committee for engaging the office of the AG in this very important process of the committee's budgetary review in preparation for compiling its report. To that regard, Chairperson, I'll jump into the reputation promise. I don't think that's something that most of us out today here don't know. We've seen this before. It's just basically our reputation promise saying that as office of the AG, we are trying to build public confidence through the audits that we conduct by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector. And the role of the AGSA as part of this reporting process is really just to assist the committee in making sure that all considerations are taken into account in preparation of the BRRR report as part of the budget review process. Now, Chairperson, as far as the actual presentation is concerned, I'll draw members' attention to slide number 4, the very colorful slide that you have in front of you. What this does is, or the aim of the slide, aims to achieve is just to indicate first and foremost that we are not living in isolation out there. And a number of years ago, a number of world leaders in the UN all came around the table, of which we were part of, and certain decisions were taken in terms of ensuring that the world we're living in is a sustainable environment for future generations. And to that effect, some of these goals were decided upon for implementation throughout the world to ensure that a sustainability goal. They are commonly referred to as Sustainable Development Goals, or the SDGs. And if Chair looks at the way that the slide is also structured, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, you will see that all the goals, the SDGs, are the border, which are the outer line, the outer perimeter. So if you bring it closer to home, which is our environment in South Africa, we deal with the NDP. So when you go to the NDP, you'll see a number of the goals and objectives included in the NDP also align or coincide with some of the SDGs. And then you bring it even closer home to a portfolio, that's where you now deal with the MTSF of any particular portfolio. And in the MTSF, there will be key goals, key programs, and key objectives which are identified, which will also be able to be linked back. And you bring it even closer to home from a portfolio to an entity level, that's where you now deal with the annual performance plan of that entity. And the little target in the middle says that even when we go and we craft the target, we must always bear in mind that target is aimed at achieving impact in terms of a greater a goal out there. And if one draws a direct correlation or a line, you will see that water and sanitation is actually directly impacted on SDG number 6. So that's the main SDG that we deal with. That's clean water and sanitation on the right-hand side, on the top of the border slide. And as far as these targets are also, or these targets are also concerned, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, part of the budget review process that the committee is engaged in today has to deal with the review of the funding, the budget that we are going to allocate and approve for the portfolio, for a particular portfolio. So it's always important that we bear in mind that funding aims to achieve certain elements of service delivery or impact. So when we do our review and considerations here, we keep this picture in mind that each individual target within an entity, within a portfolio, aims to achieve the greater target and ultimately ensuring that the environment and the world that we live in is sustainable for future generations. Now, Honourable Chairperson, on slide number 5 and 6, I'll talk to slide number 5 and 6 in tandem or in conjunction to each other. On an annual basis, the AG, the Office of the AG comes, we conduct our audits, we produce our reports, and we give findings and root causes and as well as recommendations. It's been quite a startling observation that over the course of the number of years that we've been reporting, there seems to be minimal improvement or traction in the right areas. So as also the AG, we've also identified that a particular theme for the current year that we feel will assist in making sure that there is improvement in audit outcomes. So the theme that we've decided to share with our stakeholders out there is accountability. And the accountability model is included on slide five, but the detail of it, which I'd like to really spend time talking on, is on slide number 6. So, what is accountability? If you look at the center of the pie chart there, the little yellow guy that has his hand up, says, in order for me to be assessed as an accountable official or accountable person, it means, first and foremost, there needs to be a couple of steps that needs to occur or happen. I need to clearly define, or there needs to be a clearly defined target, a clear articulation of what needs to happen, a clear understanding of what it is that we are trying to achieve. So that's at number 2, the steps. So we need to plan accordingly, ensure that we plan appropriately, knowing exactly what it is that we're trying to achieve. Once we all understand what it is that we're trying to achieve, the next step or the next phase then entails putting in place processes, controls, and little mechanisms to ensure that we are actually setting ourselves up to achieve what we have planned. So that's the do part, making sure that those little gears are working towards achieving the goals that we've defined in step number 2. And then as we go about doing and implementing, regular monitoring and regular checks are required, which is also part of the process that the departments and entities engage in, where they come on a quarterly basis and they give feedback to the portfolio committees at your level in terms of the progress, how far they are. And this is quite important, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, to ensure that we conduct regular and consistent monitoring and checks to ensure that if there's any gaps or any deficiencies identified during this process, that we can correct them early and ensure that we're setting ourselves up towards achievement of our predetermined targets. And when we identify that during the course of this monitoring and checking, that things are not going according to plan, if we understand what the root cause is, then it also requires us to act and ensure that we implement consequence management where such is required. And Chairperson, all of this is done with the intention of ensuring, and this is now from an AG's point of view, that we achieve better audit outcomes as well. Now I'm going to pause a little bit here at step number 6 to say, we are fully aware, the Office of the AG, that clean audits do not necessarily result in service delivery. There are entities out there who achieve clean audits, but service delivery is not necessarily happening on the ground. But what we've also found is that the culture of doing things the right way, if it's done from a finance point of view, the performance information, the compliance in the financial aspect, normally that culture and that behavior is also replicated towards the service delivery element, and more often than not you find the entities that are doing well in terms of service audit outcomes are also normally the institutions which are also doing well in terms of service delivery. The inverse is also true and correct, where you find entities where there are poor audit outcomes, disclaimers and qualifications are also the entities normally where in correlation they also have challenges with regard to service delivery. And obviously all of that, like we said, if the culture and the right behavior is replicated throughout the entire organization, you more often than not find that the entities are achieving impact. And in our environment, you see there's a little tap there with water coming out, making sure that there is service delivery happening. So Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, in a nutshell, there's the AGSA theme for the current year to improve audit outcomes. It all stems around accountability, the accountability model, what needs to happen, clearly defining our targets, making sure that we implement proper controls and processes, and we do regular spot checks and monitoring and reporting, act when we need to early enough, and ultimately ensuring that we are achieving an improvement in terms of impact. Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, I'm going to slide to slide number 8 now. For members, just a quick refresher for those who are not aware or may have forgotten, this is the three areas in which the annual audit process examines. So as the Office of the AG, when we conduct our audit, we look at these three areas. First and foremost, we look at the financial statements, and that's the 1 + 2 = 3 aspects. So how well you've recorded your transactions in your financial statements. Have you accounted for all your expenditure, all your revenue? Have you done everything according to the accounting standards or the accounting framework that is applicable in your environment? The second aspect is because we're an expenditure-driven government, we ask for money to go and achieve certain objectives. As the entity that has received the funding, when we have to account, we also have to account in terms of the achievement of how well we've achieved in terms of the money we have spent. So to that effect, the Office of the AG also gives us or gives feedback in terms of the performance reporting. Now, it's important at this step that we understand that the feedback we give in terms of performance reporting is only on the extent to which management has reliably, credibly, and accurately reported. So if management had 10 targets they needed to achieve, and they come and they say, I only achieved 2, we come and we audit, and the evidence is there, we will not have any significant issues because management has accurately reported they have only achieved 2. It is up to the oversight structures and those charged with governance to ensure that we understand why the performance is not at the required or expected level as promised in terms of, you know, the 10 targets versus the 2 targets. And then the last element in which we give feedback on is compliance. Obviously, we are a country of laws and regulations which we are required to observe and abide by in our day-to-day activities. So we'll also give you a status of the compliance with key legislation, especially pertaining to the financial environment, meaning your PFMA, your supply chain management, so prescripts or legislation around those financial components. And to this effect, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, if you refer to our current year audit report, you'll also see it changed slightly from the previous financial year, whereby now it's a report from the AG, but there's a specific report dealing with finances. There's a specific report dealing with performance information, and then there's also a specific report dealing with a status of compliance in this regard. And it's also important that you keep this picture in mind when we go for further slides. So, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, once we've conducted our audit, what is the type of feedback that we give out there in terms of our audit report? The audit report that we issue, the first outcome or type of outcome that entities can receive is an unqualified audit opinion with no material findings on either performance information or compliance. So bearing in mind the slide that just preceded this slide, it means all three criteria has to apply in order for you to qualify and say you've received a clean audit. An entity that is financially unqualified but has findings on predetermined objectives or compliance is not referred to as a clean audit. That's the green on the left-hand side. And the slide is also set up in such a way that it creates a little bit of shock value. So you can see from the left to the right-hand side, on the right-hand side it goes from good to worse. So on the extreme right-hand side is where ultimately or ideally as an entity you do not want to be, because that's the disclaimed audit outcome where it says entity has produced financial statements, but the financial statements are not supported at all by any form of supporting evidence, so we cannot even express an opinion because we don't know what is recorded. We can't validate what is being reported. Honourable Chairperson, I'm now going to slide over to slide number 11. Mr. Kaleri will take us through the actual detail of the outcomes, but we'll also jump in between Alice and myself as we go through the presentation. Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, and thanks, Honourable Members. I think still in the same fashion as my colleague has already alluded, you see that we have the first orange block on the far left. That's where we depict all the financial statements with outcomes, and then in the middle block, that's where we depict the compliance aspect results, and then on the green block, that's where we depict the results from the performance, the predetermined objectives. So when you look at the financial one, which is that first orange box there, you will see we have tried to reflect it over 4 years, and I think the intention there, the intention is for us to actually show the entire picture of the MTSF. So you'll see that next year we will include one other bar so that we compare it over a period of 5 years so we know exactly over the MTSF what has happened with the entities that we're reporting on. I think the entities that we're reporting on here is DWS, Water Trading, as well as Water Research Commission. In the current year that we're reporting on, which is 16-17, We have good news for the members that the Water Research Commission has actually achieved a clean opinion, which means their financial affairs, their compliance affairs, as well as their predetermined objectives, we did not have any material findings in that regard. Then we have the two other entities, which is DWS and Water Trading, which are reflected on the purple color. The purple color is qualified, so the financial statements are qualified and they have material findings under compliance as well as under predetermined objectives. So if you look in comparison with the immediate preceding year, which is 15-16, you would see that 15-16 we only had WTE that was sitting in a qualification position. And then the Water Research as well as DWS were sitting on unqualified with other findings, either in compliance and in predetermined objectives. So when we were looking at this, we said this appears to be a regression. However, there's WRC really which we ought to reflect on as a great achievement, because they have actually managed to move out of the unqualified findings to a clean opinion. If you look at the compliance element of it in the middle block, then you'll see that again WRC is our shining entity there for the current year. Then we still have DWS and Water Trading, which still have non-compliance issues that we have reported on. And then under the predetermined objectives, which is that green one to the far right, you see that one is broken into two. And the first three bars there talk to the annual performance plan. So there under the annual performance plan, we actually assessed and reviewed the targets and the indicators to see whether they comply with the SMART principles. And on all three of them, we were comfortable with the way in which the targets and the indicators were crafted, that there were no ambiguous things, they were specific, they were time-bound and so forth. And then on the other part of that one, that's where we now reflect on the results coming out of the actual audit on reliability, accuracy and completeness of the APR. Okay. If I can give context just on the far left on the financial statements, what are the items where DWS find itself as a qualified opinion on? DWS was qualified on transfer. What happened here on the transfer is DWS had an indirect grant where they would receive money and they would construct pipelines, and once they have constructed those pipelines or infrastructure, then they transfer that infrastructure over to municipalities and the beneficiaries of those. But what happened was they went and they changed the indirect grants. They met with Treasury to negotiate that they should rather give out this grant as a direct grant. But however, the contract sealed with the municipalities, implementing agents, never really changed. So from an accounting perspective, we said when you compare the activities that you are doing in 15-16 and the activities that you are doing in 16-17 with regards to this same transfer, has there really been anything that changed other than the fact that you have just reclassified it from indirect grants to direct grants? So in accounting, we always refer to that as substance over form. So we ask ourselves, has anything really changed, or have you just changed the administrative part of it, which is your argument with Treasury to say move this out of indirect grants into direct grants? So we found that nothing had really changed. And the other challenge that was there was around the indirect grants that now the department was sitting with either commitment or sitting with accruals or sitting with balances on actual construction that was in progress. Now, how do you then transfer those as a direct grant? Because before you can even transfer your current monies that you receive, you ought to then clear all these balances and push them over to the respective recipient, and that proved to be quite a challenge. And as a result of that, then we had a qualification around those transfers in the manner in which they had accounted for. Another qualification area that was there within the Department of Water and Sanitation was around irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So, the Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, you remember that the last BRRR presentation that we had done, we had a slide where we showed you that we're going to assess projects. And these projects, when we assess them, we're going to come back and report to the committee on how they fared within the budget, whether the projects were budgeted appropriately and correctly and was the spending in line with the budget, and whether there were any financial accounting challenges within those projects, and whether there were any compliance as well as predetermined objectives challenges. I know Honorable Chair said that we appear here about once or twice in a year, so we have the similar slides that will fly. I think we'll take an example of one of them, because we actually went on to do 10 projects and we assessed them in that fashion. So at the end of my presentation, I will go to one of the slides just to unpack it and also to remind management around it. Now, on WTE, around the financial qualifications, we had a qualification on PPE with regards to WTE, and then there was around where we were saying WTE constructs assets, and while they construct assets, they have a balance that keeps piling up that we call work in progress before the asset is actually completed, commissioned, and finalized and ready for use. They pile up that value, call it work in progress, and from the accounting point of view, they need to be able to break down that accumulated balance into specific projects, so that time and again they can go into each specific project and identify whether there are any impairments being any value, that any amount that we would have capitalized in there that we can reasonably say we have lost value here, either because of a halt or delays that were held within the project. Because as you delay the project, you still pay some of the service providers that are not necessarily doing anything and capitalizing it to that cost. But from an accounting point of view, you now need to ask yourself, that value that I keep capitalizing, does it add any tangible value to the asset? And then you have to then start asking questions of saying, shouldn't I impair this and that? So that entire process was not done. So they had not yet assessed that balance for whether it's impaired or not impaired. That's the one element. The other element is around the financial liabilities within TCTA. So what happens here is TCTA goes out, obtains funds to build. It was initially intended to obtain funds, and then those funds should be used within the WTE to construct. But the minister now and again can offer directives that they actually construct. So they will go out of the market, they obtain funds, and then they start constructing. But WTE has got an obligation to transfer, to almost like get out of the revenue that they receive from the sale of water and so forth, transfer some of those money to TCTA so that TCTA can service the loans that they went to acquire this financial, those funds on. So what you see is you will find that TCTA raises a receivable on WTE, and WTE raises a payable on TCTA, because WTE has to indirectly service the loan that TCTA goes and obtains the fund. So at the end of the financial year, what you normally want to see is you want to see the receivable that TCTA says, okay, I have gone, I have obtained this fund, I've constructed this much, I expect this much from WTE. And WTE will be reflecting more or less a similar figure to say, I am obliged to pay over this much to TCTA as a year end. So those receivables within TCTA and payables within WTE should in all ideal situation be equivalent and should be accounted more or less in the same manner. So what happened in the current year was that the balance that WTE had reflected of that receivable was not in agreement with the models that TCTA had. So the balance of the TCTA liability within the books of WTE did not agree with the balance of the receivable that TCTA had reflected. There was about a 1.5 billion difference that we started asking them to say, please investigate this and find out why are we out between this receivable and this payable. And that, maybe if I can try simplify this example around receivable and payable. It's almost like if I go now and I buy a house. If I buy a house, I'm going to ask Standard Bank to finance my house. In Standard Bank's book, Standard Bank will be reflecting me as a receivable. Okay. In my books, I know that I owe Standard Bank because they are paying for my house. So I would be reflecting a liability to show that I still owe Standard Bank. So it's that type of question. So receivables in the books of TCTA and the liability in the books of WTA.
So we if you could just conclude that part. Sorry, man. With a notion that talks to the asset itself, where does it ultimately reside?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. The asset actually resides within WTE. So WTE takes over that asset because ultimately they are the ones who are gonna be using that asset to receive, to offer services and then to receive the income, the charges.
Maybe in your point, Chair, the point that I want to ask is that do we have a register of all the assets under that entity?
Under what entity?
Yes, we have a register, meaning that an updated proper register of assets.
Oh, yes, okay. Thanks, Honorable Member. Yes, the water trading does have an asset register. That asset register becomes the basis of our audit of this asset. So when we start auditing the assets, the first thing we go into them to say, give us the list of all the assets that you have, and they would have to present this asset register. So the qualification that you were alluding to on the previous one was around the ones that are still under construction. So the ones that are still under construction, they are building up a balance. They call it work in progress balance. So we say this work in progress balance that you are building, you need to be able to break it down into specific projects, into specific assets that you are building. So for example, Glen William is under construction. You need to tell me out of this big balance that you have of work in progress, how much is attributable to Glen William, so that we can then have Glen William as a separate asset under construction, which we can start assessing whether the value that we have in our books is similar to the value that we have on the ground. Okay. So it would have to apply for all of them, Glen William, Lolita, whichever other ones that they are still currently under construction. Okay. The other qualification area on WTE was on irregular expenditure as well as on fruitless expenditure. So what we have is disclosed in the financial statements would be irregular expenditure with regards to WTE, but out of the audit we test whether that irregular expenditure that is disclosed there is complete. So we test whether everything that they should have disclosed as irregular expenditure in the annual financial statements, they have actually disclosed it. So out of our test we found out that there were other irregular expenditures which were not disclosed in the annual financial statements. So we start saying that the irregular expenditure that is disclosed in the annual financial statement is not complete. Would you please then go into an exercise of identifying all irregular expenditure so that you can update that balance? Okay, so as at the end of the audit, as at the end of the year, that balance, we still have concerns about the completeness of that audit. So everything that should be there that was not yet there. Similar thing with fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So we had an issue around the completeness of that fruitless and wasteful expenditure that came out here. I think around, we'll go into details, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, on the items within the irregular expenditure that we have. Okay. Now, in this slide, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we asked what happened, who did not do what, resulting in the outcomes that we have just presented above. So the way we look at it is we always look at the key controls and say which key controls collapsed or did not work according as they had intended or should have been put in place to work. And then you will find that with WRC we are quite comfortable that the key controls are in place and that the result of that is that it's sitting in a clean environment. And then with the department as well as water trading, we still have a bit of concerning areas. If you look around leadership, we still have a bit of concerns around the leadership, effective leadership. You would know that during the financial year, the DG came in and then the DG came out. You know, so those instabilities within leadership throw out the pillar of leadership as one of the key control elements out on these things. And as well, you would know that there were senior managers who were on suspension and then back again. So those type of instabilities, they really bring a knock within the leadership aspect of this. So that is why you would see that both the department would still be predominantly yellow and also starting to show items that are pink, where we say now they require intervention. Similar things around the performance and management, so under financial and performance management, that's where we start looking at do we have a proper proper record keeping controls, do we have proper reconciliatory controls, and if we have a challenge, for example, around reconciling that accumulated balance of assets into specific projects, we start looking to reconciliatory controls. If we have limitations about here, or you can't account for complete irregular expenditure, you start talking about proper record keeping. So that is why you will see there around that area is predominantly pink and red, and that's where we really say intervention is required. If you look at the governance element, we are a bit comfortable at the moment with audit committee. Audit committee keeps shouting, and then it's for management to implement the recommendations of audit committee, and that's where we think the challenge lies, in actually implementing the recommendations that are coming out of the audit committee. But internal audit, we still said it's still a bit concerning. Then we looked at this. We look also at the level of assurance that is provided by management together with audit committees, and the third layer being obviously the oversight and work portfolio committee seats. And you will see that for WRC, we are comfortable with the first level and the second level. With the department and WTE, we are concerned at senior management and at accounting officer level, and as well as it's concerning. There's only some assurance that is provided by internal audit and the executive authority.
By the chair, if I could just add here, if you look at slide 12 and you link it to the accountability model that we explained earlier, you ask yourself what control failed and who didn't monitor that it actually was done at the right level. And in this case, when you reflect on slide 12, you can see the controls that failed at the department and WTE. Leadership instability is the contributor. Leadership instability, although there's acting people, we need to understand that psychologically, people in acting positions maintain, but they very seldom make drastic changes in an entity or the department. So in this case, what we've seen right through the year is a low level of assurance by senior management and by the accounting officer, right through the year. So I want just to link this slide back to that accountability model, because you always want to go back for any finding to say where did it fail, and in this case it failed at control weaknesses. Now, going back for the last few years, it's also clear that the internal control environment hasn't been given the attention that it needed. So if something needs to change, we would like the accounting officer, senior managers to sit back, reflect on this control environment and put attention there, and not only deal with the matters in the audit report, because that what's in the audit report is only indicative of what is material. There's a high number of other findings that's not material, but it's reflective of a weak internal control environment. That's where we would like the department to take the message around accountability very serious. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thanks, Honourable Chair, Honourable Member. On this slide, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, we wanted to bring an indication of how are they doing financially, how are they spending on budget, and how are they achieving on their achievements. And then you will see that we also highlight the results of our audit on usefulness and reliability on those projects that we've audited. So we audited project 2 to project 5, and we did program 2 to all the way to program 5, and then we didn't have material findings remaining because there were material adjustments that were made in almost all of those projects. You see that exit there under material adjustments shows that they had to make adjustments out of on the reliability aspect so that we can actually be comfortable with it. And then we reflect on the budget amount as well as the spend amount and the percentage spending amount. So I think what we want you to take note of here, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is the extent of spending as well as the number of targets that are being achieved in comparison. So if you take, for example, Program 3, we would have spent 99.6% of that fund and we would have achieved 28% of the targets that we had. Equally with Program 4, we would have spent 137% of the budget and we would have achieved 83%. Now we will talk to this 137% later on when we look at the compliance slide under unauthorized and irregular expenditure. Then, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, as I alluded initially, we did projects under slide 15. We audited projects. We selected 10 projects that we were going to audit within the department. I think 5 main account, 5 WTE. And out of them, we wanted to look at the budget patterns. We want the budget allocation, the spending patterns. We wanted to look at the financial accounting thereof, compliance as well as the predetermined objectives, whether they are achieving the objectives that they wanted to achieve. Mm-hmm. You will see that we have the key findings that we have highlighted in this slide, where we're saying targets are not being achieved. We find that at this point in time, project was supposed to be in construction, but it's still under design. We find that there are projects that they should be at least already being in a process where they are completing it, but they are still either in it, starting initiating with construction, or they are even still under construction. You'll see that there are multi-year projects that have been already being incurred, expenditure has been incurred on, which are only being brought into the annual performance report now in the 16-17 financial year. So there has been spending on other projects which were not necessarily included in our annual performance report. Now we also find that there are SCM processes that were...
Are you going to give us details with regards to that?
Yes, Honorable Chair, it's already included in the slides that I will make an example on. Thanks. Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. And again, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, on these other projects, we went further to say a project might be irregular, but you may still find that there's value that management has actually obtained out of the actual funds that were spent on that. Because with irregular expenditure, you are saying when you committed those funds or when you were spending those funds, you did not do it in compliance with a specific legislation or a requirement or a prescript that requires you to that you were supposed to comply with, but you can still probably have received them. So we went in, included, we sourced engineer experts to assist us to evaluate whether the spending as well as what was already spent and what is already on the ground is the value at least coming closer to each other, and we could start identifying that others that were not, the values were not aligned and indicative of potential fruitless and wasteful expenditures, which also then would obviously result on the financial statements on those qualification on the completeness of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And you would also still see those other projects, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, where there was spending, but those projects were not budgeted for. So I think those are the key findings that we had around this project. Now the next slide, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, is the one that highlights the project that we audited, that we are alluding to in the end above. So we audited those 10 projects, Honourable Chair. And then the green block on each item indicates that there were no material findings or no material concerns that we noted. Then the red one or the pink one is where we are saying we noted material findings and we have material concerns around them. So if you just sit back and you look at this picture already, you can see the dominant color becomes the pink, the red color. The first column after the name of the project, that's where we show whether was the project budgeted properly, whether they were still within the spending of the budget, and whether even the annual, because with budget you may find that the project is a multi-year project. So what they would normally do is they would allocate annual budgets as they go with the project. So we zoom into those annual budgets. We also look at whether holistically we still within the overall budgeted funds. So you will see that on some of these we have actually identified where they have exceeded the annual budget that was allocated. Like for example, in the Limpopo Giani, they have actually exceeded the annual allocation budget. And then in the Limpopo number 6, in the Limpopo emergency project, we realized that one, the budget was never even there in the first place for 16-17. So the details of these colors are at the back of the slides. We have attached the annexures where we outline how much was budgeted for, how much was the spending, how much was not budgeted, how much was spent, etc., etc. And then under financial management, that's just where we look at accounting. We say, were there any accounting challenges that we noted? For example, if you were paying for tax, inclusive of tax to a non-VAT vendor, then we start saying, if you are paying VAT to a non-VAT vendor, we start highlighting those type of things within the financial aspect. And then compliance, that's where we look at when you were awarding contracts within this project. Did you award the contract in accordance and in compliance with SCM prescripts? As well as we looked at the contract management thereof, particularly for the ones where we start seeing overspending, say you should ordinarily have a contract management in place where you lock in the amount that you have approved for this budget, and the closer to you getting to exhausting the money that you have contracted to, there needs to be an early warning system that already highlights that you are going into the red in terms of the contract value of this entity. So you find that they are not there, and then we'll also look at the project management specific things, where they say you can't go start appointing people without necessarily having a feasibility study done and so forth, finalized and so forth. So that compliance is not just limited to SCM compliance as we would normally audit within our compliance. It includes contract requirements, etc. On predetermined objectives, we were just looking at, are you where you are supposed to be? Are you where you had planned to be on this specific project? When you now say, end of 16-17, we're supposed to be in the construction phase. Are you in construction phase, or are you still in design, etc., etc., etc.?
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, by way of example, we'll take you to one of the projects at the back. I see some members have already started paging to it. So if one, for example, considers the Limpopo Mupane project under slide number 6, or just before we jump to Limpopo project under slide 6, I'd like to quickly correct error, because I see members are reading this. This is going to make for interesting reading in detail. On the third project, which is the Limpopo Giani Bulk Service project, slide number 33, right at the bottom of the page, we say the recommendation is for the department to stop the project. We'd like just to correct that. Maybe just to say to review the project to ensure, because you can't stop a project, it's already started. Just get some members going to pick it up tonight during a bedtime reading story, and then tomorrow it's in the newspaper saying the AG says all projects should be stopped. So it's just a recommendation that the project rather be reviewed, and then we understand exactly what is the pitfalls which are resulting in the actual fruitless and wasteful expenditure, as we have identified the indicators thereof. But
why are you scared to say it must be stopped?
No. It's an oversight in the preparation of our slides on the virtual. Okay. We can't say you must stop. We can't prescribe to management in terms of what it is that management must do. We are saying management, we've identified potential indicators and problems on the project. Go and review, because remember, our audit does not look at the full scope of the project. So we recommend to management that they must go and review, and based on the evidence that will come across, management must then make that management decision to say whether they will stop or continue with the project.
The kind of audit you have done on Giani project, is it only on paper, or have you done performance audit into the Giani project?
100%. It's a very good question. So maybe by way of introduction and with indulgence from the chairperson, what we normally do, the normal audit is called regularity audit or statutory audit. So the regularity audit will look at sample basis, we look at certain things. So if you have disclosed, for example, your assets, your infrastructure, I am also required to go and look if that physical asset exists on the ground and then do the normal accounting steps for the impairment, as Mr. Kaleri has included earlier on. A performance audit is now where the Office of the AG will identify a specific focus area, specific component or theme that you want to add value on, and in agreement with the department and relevant other stakeholders will identify focus areas on that specific project. And that project, normally we will look at the three E's, the economy, the effectiveness, and the efficiency, whereas the audit just looks at the financial statement, the credibility, the reliability, and the accuracy, assertion-based auditing. So, as part of this environment within which we operate, it's an infrastructure-intensive environment. I am an accountant by trade and by nature. So in order for us to be able to still sign off on the financial statements, I have to get an infrastructure specialist in to assist us on the audit. So the audits that we conducted in the current financial year were statutory audits or regularity audits, but with a specialist involved in order for us to ensure that we look at. So I'm an audit, I can go and look at the dam. There's a dam wall. So what? I see it, it's there. Whereas an engineer will tell you, the specs, the design, right through the project management phases, which are also important because they have a financial implication. If there is a crack in that dam wall, how do I assess the extent of that crack and what implication it should have on the financial statements? If management says that that dam wall is 1 million and there's a crack in it, the engineer can tell me the crack results in this dam not being usable or being usable, and therefore it is impaired, there should be a write-off in the financial statements. So it is a statutory audit that we conducted in the current year, regularity audit, but with the assistance of specialists in the field, infrastructure specialists, to ensure that at the end of the day, the values that we are signing off on are appropriately disclosed as the correct values.
But on project number 3, the department gets you. Your finding. And they argue that there is value for money on that particular point. Mm-hmm. And you even went down with them. And why didn't you reach an agreement?
Maybe let's also somewhat delve into that aspect of the business end of things. Honorable Chair, honorable members, at this stage we'd also like to inform you that the department has actually lodged formal objections on the audit report which have been issued by the Office of the AG. There is a dispute resolution process that is currently ongoing on some of the findings which specifically relate to these projects. Now, the honorable member's question was quite clear. The department disputes that there's value. But how can there be value on a project if you've got evidence of double invoices that you've paid on a project? So essentially, we've got evidence where an invoice for, I'm just going to use an example, 100 rand was invoiced, and then you have the same invoice again being put through and being paid on the same project. So essentially, you are telling the users, I've got a project for 200 rand in your financial statement, but yet it's actually double payment. So where's the value in that? And that's just but one instance in this example. Remember, I think first and foremost, if we go to the project, we assess if the project on the ground. We are happy to tick it off, so I can see that the project is on the ground. But just because I got the bottle of water does not mean that I got value for it, because I got a full bottle of water, yet is, but instead of paying 10 rand, maybe that's the rest that I paid 20 rand for it. So then the value for money concept still comes in.
Yeah.
So we're not disputing, so we went, we checked, it's there, some of it is on the ground. But that's one example we used. The other example I'll use was, there was another district in another project in Mopani that is in the same area, in the same district. But this project went through the department's open tender processes. So they went, they ran a tender, they had a verification committee, they selected a supplier. Once they had selected the supplier for comparability sake, laying almost a similar type of pipe, I mean, if it was one thing, it was if it was in Cape Town and then in Limpopo, you could argue rock surface or engineering concepts, but in the same district, same area. This project was averaging a cost of about 500 per square meter, whereas this project was averaging about 1,500 per square meter. Then you have to ask, it's similar projects or projects similar in nature, what is the other one different than the other one? Is it additional engineering work that's required or a different structure of pipe? So again, it's related to this entire process as well, where we identified a whole host of indicators which we provided the partners to say go and follow it up. So that dispute resolution process is still underway, but we are fairly confident in the findings that we presented to the department and we let the process unfold in that regard.
So, but is the auditor general a? Do you have interest of public money and how public money is spent? And take a serious interest.
Yes.
In your report, obviously, you put your report, you highlight that seriously to say there's a problem. But I find it very mild.
Okay, let's continue. We will come to all of those. Okay. I'll close it by saying, again, we are, if one considers our mandate in terms of public audit, what is the regularity audit and what is the statutory audit, we have found an indication that you have overpaid potentially on this. So then I say, how do I report it from the compliance point of view, from the reporting requirement? It's PFMA says potential fruitless and wasteful. If you refer to the audit reports of both the WTE and the department, you'll see there that we have said that the fruitless and wasteful expenditure and the irregular expenditure that are reported by both entities is incomplete because of this process. There's more that should have been included as a result of the work that went into this.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I think I'll move then now, Honourable Chair and Honourable Committee Members, to the financial viability. Included in our audit report for both the main account for the department as well as for the entity is an emphasis on the going concern, element. And then that going concern element is linked directly with this financial viability assessment that we have done here. So you will take note, Honourable Member, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, that with regards to the department has got a shortfall in appropriation of about 5.9% of cash that they did not have. You will see that they had a liquidity, an asset liquidity ratio of a negative figure of about negative 3.9%. So when they compare the cash that they have, the current assets that they have, and they take out the ones where you can easily convert into cash quickly, and you compare that to your current assets, you find that now you are sitting in a negative figure, which ideally says you don't have enough cash to actually service the liabilities, that the current liabilities that you have an obligation to do.
So, Honourable Chairperson, with your permission, I think if you look at both slides on page slide number 18 and slide number 19, I think if you look at the graph, you will see the picture we try to tell you is just a diminishing cash reserve. And we've intentionally also done it so you can get a full background in terms of the history. So you will see in 2014-15 there's relatively sufficient cash reserve, and it's really gone down over the course of the past 2 years. So that's something that's worthwhile maybe to keep in the back of the mind when engaging and understanding exactly what are the root causes and contributors towards this diminishing and cash flows.
We did the same assessment even for even under WTE, where you see that the best figure there shows that their cash reserves have actually dropped into the negatives, and they are sitting in a 2.6 billion deficit asset year end. But also the profit, the net profit thereof is also following suit and even deteriorating at an even more significant pace. And the bottom line one is just where we reflect the expenditure versus the revenue that we have. You'll see that the expenditure being the red line is actually above the revenue line of the entity, resulting in a gap between expenditure already and the revenue. And here, Honorable Chair, that the impact of that qualification on assets would have been, if management would have done that process and identified additional amounts that they needed to have impaired, those impairments would increase this expenditure line, and it could have even increased significantly more than what it currently reflects. If you look at the next one, that's where we just highlight on some of the components in comparison. So you will see, if I just take you to the middle one here, where I look at revenue, trade receivables, and so forth, you'll see that revenue increases by about 8%, trade receivables increases by about 22%, provisions for impairment increases by 44%, as well as payables increases by 66%. So you will see that these other ones are increasing in double digits, while revenue is increasing in a single digit.
So if I may add on this, Honorable Chairperson, I think what must be taken out of this slide, the message has been made that we've got some challenges with regard to the going concern and our ability to operate as such. But for me, I think what I'd like to highlight to the committee in the middle table is that your provision for impairment has more than doubled. Your provision for impairment means I've got 10 billion worth of people who owe me money. And I've actually provided that for 7 billion of them, they are potentially irrecoverable. So for about 7 billion of the 10 billion which is owed to me, there's a risk that I may not even be able to recover that money. That's what the provision for impairment means. So it means that I've got 10 billion worth of receivables, as indicated in the second line, but of the 10 billion, approximately 7 billion is already in doubt that I may not be able to recover that money that's owed to me. And I know that there are certain background or root causes towards this in terms of the nature of the people who owe us money, but it's just something that we thought it's worth noting to see that we are noting that more people will not be able to pay us the debt which is due to us as and when it accrues. And then also the ability not to be able to collect our cash and our revenue in terms of the receivable balances which have grown, then unintendedly impact on our own ability to pay our creditors or the people who we owe money, and as a result we see the payable balance, which is the bottom row there, is also increased to 60%. So by not collecting money, it means I don't have money, or collecting money which is due to me means I don't have money to then also then subsequently pay on the guys whom I owe money to.
The next slide, that's where we look at, that's where we just reflect. In figure one, we reflect the non-compliances that we have in our report, which is one around material misstatements that were corrected and those that were not corrected within the financial statement. You will see that we had an improvement because WRC moved out of that last year, because this current year is now green. We're still remaining with DWS as well as WTE. We still have a challenge around the prevention of unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure, as well as fruitless expenditure. It applies to both the department as well as DWS, because they have even disclosed some of the irregular expenditures, and we also even qualified them on the completeness thereof. We still have challenges around management and contract management, and that's still applicable to both DWS as well as WTE. We still have places we've already alluded to, projects where you spend beyond what you have, which should have been prevented by your adequate procurement and contract management. We still have challenges around consequence management. I think around consequence management, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, you know that it is scope by extending the project, just getting to see what the department has done with 1516 irregular expenditures that they still delay. Under Figure 2, that's just where we highlight the qualification areas which we've already alluded to. DWS has got for the qualification in procurement and wasteful expenditure, irregular expenditures as well as commitments. WTE has got qualification in fruitless irregular expenditure, financial liabilities at PPE. And I think WRC is clean on figure 3, so the changes that amendments that the corrections that the guys did not do still reside within the department as well as the entity. The next slide, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, that's where we highlight the disclosed unauthorized expenditures, irregular expenditures, fruitless and wasteful expenditures. You will see that on the bar here we highlight how much of that amount was disclosed, and then just on next to it, to the right of it, we highlight what exactly was transpired out of this bar. So, for example, if we take that unauthorized expenditures, it's a cumulative amount of about 406 million. Included in that 406 million is two things. It's 14 million that was financial assistance, that was 114 million that was provided as financial assistance that was provided to one of the entities and that was not approved by National Treasury. And then 292 million of that is that overspending on program 4 that we talked about on that other slide where we said spending on program 4 is about 14 million is there under program 4, they spend 137.5%. So that they exceeded their allocated funds in that by 37.5%, resulting in unauthorized expenditures for bucket eradication specifically. That is the one that comes in there. Then under that, and then on the far right block, that's where we highlight what has happened to this item in the audit report. So you'll see that unauthorized expenditure was not qualified because they made appropriate disclosures for it. Now if you come to fruitless and wasteful, you'll see that there's 60 million that was disclosed. You'll see that we highlighted it in red. And the reason why we highlighted in red is because on the far right block we highlight to the audit call to the committee that balance was qualified in both financial statements of the department as well as the entity. Coming out of here, it's a number of things. Mostly from the department is those areas around those potential fruitless and wasteful expenditures that my colleague has already highlighted, of overspending within this project, the double payments within here, where you're paying a higher rate within there. And then in WTE, it's partly that, plus also they have additional items that they have spent themselves on, like for example, they procured an accounting and IT system for municipalities and water boards. And at the current, for a period of 5 years, starting as of 1617, but in 1617, no one of the water boards or the municipalities were using that system, yet they had already been paid. So we agreed with them to say, this amount that you have already spent, we're going to apportion over 5 years, and we're going to recognize fruitless and wasteful expenditure as in which a year lapses, that your full benefits are not being taken advantage of by the water board as well as the municipalities. The far right one says it's qualified in our report. Similar thing. Okay, here we just before I move over from the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, you will see that The bulk of the 60 million would be what is disclosed by the main account, because main account had actually disclosed that their figure in page 284 of the annual report. WTE refused to make the necessary disclosures, so theirs is not disclosed. It's not even disclosed in the annual report on page 405. Similarly,
when you say they refuse, what do you mean? You said they refuse.
After we audit, we always bring evidence to management to say we have identified this particular fruitless and wasteful expenditures. We engage with them on them, and then we say these are the items at least that we have identified from audit. You need to include them in your disclosures in your annual financial statements. And then you find that they don't want to disclose that. Unfortunately, we can't necessarily force them to make that disclosure. It's engagements that we provide them with evidence. We say, this is the evidence, please disclose. They won't disclose. And further to that, we always even say, go back and revisit your entire population and make sure that the ones that were not part of our sample that still sit within your environment, you identify and disclose. So in this case, even the ones that we identified from the audit process, they did not disclose.
What are the implications of that?
We qualified it in any case on the completeness. We say in that figure, but for sure it's not complete.
So it becomes normal then,
Charles. It doesn't end there, but it ends there from the audit process, because now we've reported, we've said we've got evidence that there's potential fruitless and wasteful expenditure, or we actually have not potential, there's fruitless and wasteful expenditure we've engaged. So it's up to management to then disclose. So remember, we sign off on whether what you have put in the financial statement, is that complete, accurate and reliable. So what we're saying is what they have there on page 405 is not complete because they have not disclosed. As far as the refusal to disclose, I think the consequence management should then be taken further by those charged with governance and oversight structures.
Parliament.
I didn't want to say it outright, but I think that's what they want. So leave it at that.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. It's the same thing even with irregular expenditures. So you will see that that irregular expenditure of 1.6 billion that's reflected, the majority of it is the one that's disclosed in page 282 by the department, and then 401 is the one that's in page 401 of the annual report is the one that's disclosed by WTE. But WTE, again, did not disclose the ones, the further irregular expenditures that we have highlighted to them during the audit process. So they refused as well to include that. The far right one still says they are qualified in both the main account as well as on WTE. That the one in between is where we explain what are the nature of irregularities that we picked up. So in, for example, in DWS implemented, they had implementing agents who did not follow normal SEM processes. I think that one keeps coming because it has been in front of the portfolio committee year in, year out. And then we find that with WTE, they created the panels where they just now source services out of this panel without necessarily going out on tender and advertising. And then there are deviations which are approved that are not without justifiable reasons of why they are deviating, and they procured an IT system without going through CETA. So we have highlighted, we have given the indication of what are the nature of these irregularities that happened here. I think the next slide, Honorable Chair, that's where we look at the consequence management, what has the department and the entity have they investigated, and after they have investigated, have they conducted disciplinary hearings where they are supposed to be conducting disciplinary hearings within the areas of unauthorized expenditure, fruitless, wasteful and irregular expenditures that we had identified way from previous years as well as in current years. So you find that within the entity, you still find that there are disciplinary hearings that were not taken against officials, even though investigations were done, and where the investigations were done and it was confirmed disciplinary hearings needed to have taken place, that still did not happen. And then we still have other irregular expenditures that still had to be investigated, which were not taken investigated. You also still recall that there's still a process that currently is still running under SCOPA, where they're trying to get the press press management up and running within the department. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, those were the outcomes of our audit. Now we had to sit back and reflect and say, given all these things that we have presented to the committee at the point at this point in time, what are the root causes of this? What are the commitments that we have received from the executive committees that are either still in progress, that are not yet, that have not yet kicked in within the system to actually turn around the situation, and what is it that we can recommend to be done so that we can get more of green colors in our presentation. So we have identified, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that there's like a slow response, identified a slow response in management in dealing with identified findings, whether those findings are identified by external audit, they are identified by internal audit, and so forth. There's generally a slow response in management in responding to the issues we have identified. The instabilities that we have at accounting officer position, as well as within the senior management level within the entities, as you know, Honorable Chair, that other DVDs were suspended, others resigned, and so forth. And we also have identified, in line with our previous slide, that consequence management is not effected as strongly as it ought to, so that it can quickly correct the culture and the behavior within the environment in the department, as well as just officials acting in the best interest of the entity. I think we have started picking up expenditures that were not budgeted, that the guy that the entity is spending on. We start asking ourselves, this project, how do you even engage in this project that are not included in your APP? So that thing of just acting in the best interest of the organization, we're starting to grapple with it and saying that there's some challenges around here. We have engaged with the executive authority, I think, in the previous years, and there were commitments that were made. You will see that we highlighted them in the middle part there of that slide. The red borderline around this thing says it's not yet implemented. The yellow borderline says it is in progress, and then the green one is supposed to say that it has been implemented, and the black one it's a new one. So you will see that we still have about three of the commitments that are not yet implemented, which is strengthening controls around the implementing agents, because this just keeps coming over, it keeps coming year in, year out, and then taking of ownership within the processes of the department. Hence we are even saying in the previous block there that we starting to become a bit worried around whether the officials act in the best interest of the department, and also just to strengthen the internal controls around accruals and commitment. You would take note that this was qualified again this year. So those are the things that are still not yet implemented. The focus risk assessment is in progress, and it's been monitored by the audit committee, as well as the establishment of the structure to include to incorporate the sanitation function is also something that has better in progress. Now, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, on the far right there, within that orange block there, that is where we said, how do we solicit specific targeted support from the portfolio committee in assisting us in trying to change the environment within the department, and we thought we should put it in a form of recommendations to the portfolio committee. They are not in any way, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member, prescriptive. They are what we believe that if we can assist each other, hold together this, keep passing this baton between ourselves and the committees, so that we try and influence change within the environment. We thought these are the areas that we believe we can have. I think what we just saying in a nutshell is saying if we can have specific look within the areas that sits in qualification. So you will see that, for example, under number 4 there we say we should have a list of actions to be taken against the transgressors who resulted in irregular expenditures, who resulted in fruitless and wasteful expenditures. And if you can constantly have oversight of it from this side, we will also have constant oversight and engagement with management on our side, and then we can meet at regular intervals to look at the progress that is being made in that area. Okay, and I think I'll end it.
Thank you very much, Chair. On the audit methodology announcement, I think he wanted to touch on a few matters. He has spent time the last few years to sharpen our source. One of the areas that we are getting involved in currently is the issue around status of records review. And it's really to say, if you had an asset register, are you monitoring that asset register? How often are you sending out teams to do the physical verification, etc.? So it really looks at the what is the status of records right through the year. So we don't do it just quarterly, we can do it 6 months, and we can choose any month and we say, where's your records for that month? It's really dependent on a lot of engagement with the department to say, are you always tightening up on your internal control, or is it a year-end effort? But is there discipline installed right through the year? We've done it for water phase during the pilot phase, and we've identified a number of areas where they need to tighten up, especially around procurement and contract management, and as well as compliance management. That there's areas where they need to follow through on it. We give a report to the department, and we will also use that report, although it's not a public document, to give you a sense during the year of where they are in terms of their status of records review. We have also integrated our methodology to say when we look at a transaction, we look not only at it from a financial perspective, what is accounted for correctly, we also make sure that transaction did follow the compliance rules, that for that transaction money was actually spent for its intended purposes. So we're really changing our focus from selecting transactions from the finances and then auditors, from selecting projects and following through right through the finances. So it sharpens our methodology a lot in terms of giving you value for money and making sure that accountability in good governance is thriving in government. Chair, I would like to take 2 minutes and talk about the corruption formula on the next slide. This is Academicus that came up with this formula, but it makes a lot of sense in the context of our conversation this morning. And if I can just explain, the monopoly is, government's got a monopoly to provide services. But they also need discretion. Management needs discretion to say, what projects are they going to spend it on? How are they going to spend their money? What they want to prioritize and what they don't want to prioritize. That's all good. What is the driver here is the issue around accountability. And we see instances where when accountability is low, it creates an environment that's conducive for corruption. The inverse is also true. Where accountability is strong, we've seen an environment where there's very little red flag around corruption. In this case, and I must put it forward, that we haven't identified any incidents of corruption. For us to be able to express ourselves, there needs to be an investigation. And you will see that on some of the projects we have recommended that special investigations be done. Because it's only after a proper special investigation done by people that are skilled in that area, you cannot ask the auditor to do a special investigation. So we are not trained to be investigated. We have also seen where corruption is thriving, there's a decline in service delivery, and that's why we are so strongly motivated this year to talk about culture of accountability in government, because we need to step back and say that if we've been talking for a number of years around slow response, instability in leadership, a lack of consequences, it's time that we pause now and say what is failing us, and the area that fails us is the area around accountability, and making sure that people are held responsible in these failures in the day-to-day operations of the department. Chair, I thought that was important for me to flag this last slide in the context of what we discussed. Just in terms to conclude the conversation around the dispute that was lodged, we hope to finalise that dispute soon. Our file is currently with independent quality control to make sure that what we've done is right or wrong for that matter. And once that outcome is available, we will also share it with the chair. Thank you very much, Chair.
Members, those are some of the issues, not limited though, hence point of raising some of the issues. Obviously some of the issues might also come out of our interaction. I mean, maybe just before we start, if you can just comment very briefly, there is a current impasse that the country is engulfed with insofar as audit work is concerned, across all the entities that are within the department, and also of course the department is directly done by yourself. Is KPMG not involved in any of your entities?
No, yeah, yeah.
I must be honest, in any entity in the portfolio, I need to go and check. But where they, let me put it to you like this, where they're doing audits on our behalf, whether we contract in staff or whether we contract it out to the firm, all those audits are signed by the Auditor General. So KPMG doesn't sign any of our audits, even if we use their resources on our audits. So they follow our methodology and they follow our quality control procedures. What we've also done...
The simple question is KPMG entrusted by yourself in any of the entities?
Chair, the simple answer to that question is WRC, WTE, and water and sanitation we do ourselves as officers of the AG with our own staff, so no.
That was a simple, straightforward question. I could hear you wanted to be very academic.
No.
Okay, members, those are some issues, as I said, those are some of the issues the AG's office would have. I must also mention, members, I respect the wisdom of members earlier on with their decision. However, I must say that what the AG's office was presenting to us is exactly what was presented to the department. So whatever the AG's office was presenting here, the department has full briefing and knowledge. So whether they were here or not, but that's something else that maybe we should look into going forward. I just thought, let me just make that comment. The issues are straightforward. The AG's office was very frank in its reporting. At the heart of it all, the department shall spend almost 100% of its budget, 99.7, having achieved 53% of its target. Did I get it right in your summary? Okay. Members? Mr. Fasson? Mr. Kondo? And Mr. Chauke? Okay, let's check it with the role that she approached.
Chairperson, thank you. I agree with you in the sense that what's been presented to us was presented to them. The difference is the question that we will ask the department and the answer we will get will differ from what we will get from the department. That's the main reason why we think they should not have been here, because the same questions we're going to ask them to explain, we'll ask the department to explain. Chairperson, firstly, I'm very much concerned on value for money. The first question. Our biggest program where we spend money is on program 3, infrastructure. And if we see we've spent 12 billion on this program and only achieved 28%, my question really is that where did this money go? Because they didn't achieve what they should have achieved. So for me is exactly what you said. This bottle of water is 10 rand. We didn't pay 20 for it, we paid 50 for it. And the asset is there at a huge price. And that's most probably why we only achieved 28% of our targets. You need to explain that portion to me. Chairperson, then, in total, the department has achieved 48% of the defined targets. Although, on the biggest item, the others will push it up. But eventually, if you look at your main contributor where the most money is, the department doesn't look that bad on 48%, but it should be 28%. Because on the 12.1 billion rand, they only achieved 28%. Now, if you add all these other percentages, this is one thing, Chairperson. When you look at percentages and then you say, okay, I have achieved 48%. But if you go and look at where your most money has been spent, it was only 28%. Chairperson, then, both these entities you say are not going concerns. My question is, what is the way forward for the portfolio committee you recommend on water trading entity and the Department of Water and Sanitation has not been a going concern? I would like to ask on the accruals. Chairperson, in your documentation, the AG says that the accruals were 552 million 30 days on the end of March. Chairperson, I've got a document here from the department on the first quarter report that indicates that the accruals on 31st of March is 1.5 billion. Now, can you, maybe I have missed it somewhere, can you maybe offer a summary of your documentation? You talk about 552 million accruals, and the department is talking about 1.5 billion accruals, and they explain how much they have paid, if you can explain that to us. Chairperson,
in that first quarter of 2017-18,
that's correct, Chairperson. The one that was presented to us on the 23rd of August this year, okay. On the first quarter.
But we are aware that we're dealing with 2016-2017.
Yes, Chairperson, but the accruals come from 2016-17. just want to go through here. Chairperson, in both of the instances, no leadership. The accounting officer did not ensure the internal controls relating to major decision making in one division, and there's no one that's been there's no consequences. there's no consequence management, and then the liquidity of the entity, the water trading entity, and that bothers me, decreased from 3.32 to 1 to 0.70.1 due to the overdraft of 2.2 billion. How would that impact on future, although they don't borrow money, but how would that impact on TCPA eventually, because the money to pay back would come from the water trading entity. Chair, I would leave it with that. And lastly, I would just like to ask Chairperson, we see on all of these losses, this amount, 1.2 million, resulting from fruitless and wasteful expenditure, with no recovery from liable persons. Chairperson, and then it comes back to leadership. There's no leadership, there's no management in that department. We know that. We are struggling with that. And see, somewhere along the line, if we want to prevent, this thing is getting worse by year. They are not adhering to previous requests. We've heard today that even a request for this financial year for information, it was not given. And that is a problem. And then the investigations is a concern. We have numerous investigations already in this department with no outcome. For the last 3 years, this department has been investigated by the SIU, public protector, but with no results. The Mattel task team, we've asked numerous times, we want to see these reports. And I get the impression, Chair, and if I'm wrong, I'm getting the impression in this department that we talk about the culprits, or we've got to look for the culprits, and there should be consequences. But I believe that the main reason why we don't get it is because the people that need to take the decisions, they are the culprits. So, you know, if I'm the culprit and I am the acting DG, and I'm not saying he is, I'm using examples, then the DDGs, nothing will happen to them. Because everybody knows what everybody's done. And eventually the feeling I get is, don't fear, the minister will bail us out. Mm. And that, in essence, Jefferson, I'm closing with that remark. Is that we have seen when difficult issues are coming up on finances, the minister are called in, then the minister takes charge and explains, and not the acting DG or the acting CFO. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Chair. Well, Mr. Bissoy raised a lot of our questions, I think, on the two questions. You know, Chair, when you read the Mr. Chancellor.
Oh, sorry about that. The Chair was mistaken on something. Sorry.
Just to, you know, to share it with us later.
No, I think we'll call the SIU.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, that's one of my requests I was just going to make. That the committee requests the SIU to come and make a presentation, please, on all the outstanding investigations, as well as the ones that are that have been concluded and the reports we've never kept eyes on. I'm making that as a formal request, please, Chair, that we have that presentation very, very soon. Second to that, this 114 million rand that was due to transfer an implementing agent that was not approved by Treasury, what was that for? What project was that, do you know? And where was that? I'm very keen to know. And then this decision to the change from direct grant to indirect grant. What motivated this? What was the rationale behind this? What was the outcome? This was, how was it supposed to assist the department? Because you said it's not working, so what was the rationale behind this, firstly? And then, Chair, Section 38 of the PFMA is very, very clear on the roles and responsibilities of the accounting officer. And I'm extremely concerned listening to the presentation by the AG. Every single one of those, from A to N, have all been violated. What are the repercussions of the violations? I submitted a written question a while back to the Minister regarding the over 2 billion rand with the irregular expenditure from 2015-16 and who was going to be held accountable. And she said it wasn't the CFO, it was managers, HODs of different departments, and that action was going to be taken. Now we hear that no action has been taken on anyone for anything. But how do we hold those people accountable? If the accounting officer is the DG, but the CFO was there, now we've got the CFO is the DG is the CFO, we don't even know who's who. The linesman is the referee, and the referee is the linesman. Who must we hold accountable? If in your new way of doing things and holding people accountable, who do you recommend we hold accountable in this particular instance? But let's leave some for the others. Sorry, Chair. Just before I conclude. Section number 2, section 38, chapter 5, 38.2 makes very, very special reference to not who's accountable, but the collections of, but that hasn't happened. So how do we invoke these sections of the PFMA?
Thanks, Chair. I want to agree with my two colleagues that we need to invite the SIE just to brief us. Because if you remember, Chair, we had an interaction with the department. We asked the question whether the project is under investigation. And the answer that we got was that no. And now it's coming that the project is under investigation. I don't want the AG to respond, Chair, but it's surprising that all other institutions are investigating this project, but you don't get any outcome. The AG audit the department and projects, then the audit gets disputed. Very strange, isn't it? But they don't have to respond. The question that I have for them, Chair, is this dispute resolution, how long is it going to take? Because it hamstrung us as a portfolio committee to do oversight on the department if there's this dispute, if not resolved. Because you will ask a question to the department and the department will say, we're disputed. We don't agree with that. Let's wait for, you know, they will avoid accountability. Yeah. On the basis of that. So I just want to understand how quick that it can happen. Secondly, it relates to the issue which Honorable Basson has raised, the issue of the performance of Program 3, is it 28%? But the budget is at around 99. It's finished. I guess the reason why the budget is finished, it could be double invoicing. I just guess that it will be that, but you can confirm that. But the question that I have is, how often do you find this double invoicing in a number of projects that the department is implementing, but also double counting of consulting hours? How often is that? Because I think that's where the money is slipping without actually achieving the intended objectives which the department said they would achieve. There's an issue in which you raised with regards to a project in Eastern Cape. I can't find it, but you're talking about a project completed, and your expectation is that when the project is completed, a completion certificate must be issued. Then you find out that the completion certificate is still to be issued, but the project is said to have been completed. Why is that? I don't understand it. Thanks.
No, Chairman, the approach that we sort of, at some point I think we agreed here that we have to invite the internal audit of the department before even you deal with the department. You have to invite the risk. These two areas of the department are very key. Firstly, in monitoring controls, even before the AG moves into the space, those are the first ones to deal with the problems and identifying problems and risks. My question of yours is going to be, what is your view, AG, with regard to the capacity of these two areas of function in the department? Do they exist? If they exist, are they capacitated? If they don't exist, I see that they've made the recommendation. Because that's where you start with dealing with your internal controls and all of that. But I think we must not be very much scattered, Chair. What I'm identifying is two areas that I'm identifying. One is that Parliament passes the budget, informed by the APP of the department. In particular, if you look at Program 3, which is infrastructure, then the department goes and spends the money, and it only meets the 28% target. The rest of the money is not accounted for. But there's this element, again, the department of transferring money to entities. And I thought maybe we'll have to talk more about that, because that's an area where there's no accountability. No one follows the law there. These entities do as they want, and a lot of money that goes to entities. Now, this conversation between the, what you call them, the ministerial, whatever, instructions, vis-a-vis the capacity of the department to implement it, in fact, it diverts what the department has planned. Hence, the department does not meet its target. Have the AG looked at the capacity of the internal? I see that they have not done audit on Program 1. And my question of yours is going to be around this construction unit of the department. Where does it feature in under Program 1? Because I'll take it that the rest of the people that are in the construction unit are supposed to be employees of the department. Where does it fit in the structure of the department? Not only that, what are the implications of not auditing Program 1 of the department? Because that's where you deal with your capacity of the department to deliver service. And if this is not audited, what does it mean, therefore, do we have, where we are sitting here, are we satisfied that this department will be able to deliver with whatever budget that we have passed again now? Now, Chair, I want us to spend time around issues of program 3. Agreeing with the, what Honorable Jake and Honorable Makonde have just agreed that maybe we must invite the Special Investigation Unit. It does not end there. Special Investigation Unit may be about what we may want to deal with is the mandate. What mandate? What areas are they investigating? But where does it leave the Portfolio Committee chair? This Portfolio Committee has the power to call for investigations, especially Program 3. I will tell you why I'm saying this, Chair. The DDG responsible for Program 3 was suspended. This committee was never briefed what was the charges, and the person is back again in the department. The legal information that I pick up in my corner tells me that this person signed bulk and bulk of billions of rand unauthorized. And I'm telling you that that case will not go anywhere unless this committee takes this matter seriously. We sort of begin to, because we can instruct the DG, I mean the AG, we can, by the way, we can instruct you to go and investigate, we can, you have capacity to do that, we can, and nothing stops the Portfolio Committee to do that exercise. We can call in any other, you know, a agency to join you. I'm worried about, and we're not picking up any concern from National Treasury. Maybe at some point in that meeting with a Special Investigating Unit Chair, and the Auditor General must be part of that meeting, we must invite National Treasury at the highest level of National Treasury. If we're to invite the Director General, we have to do that, Chair, of National Treasury, the Director General. Because I'll take it that they'll have a serious concern of the current developments that are happening in the department. And we can't have National Treasury that does not flag and say anything around these concerns that they've just picked up. So, I don't have much of the questions here, but my confirmation of the slides that I see here, the corruption slide is not put innocent. It's not innocent, that slide. That slide is beginning to say to the committee, wake up, we're identifying a problem. It's not innocent, this slide. And therefore, hence, I'm saying that let us compose ourselves, Chair, properly and really begin to zoom into what is the problem. I mean, there's no leadership. The Director General gets suspended and gets suspended because you said something about Chauke said so-and-so does not have capacity, therefore you get suspended. And there's no order there. Budget eradication. The DDG gets suspended. Why he got suspended? Overspend the budget. The target, I'm surprised that in your target here is something else, but that person was suspended. And in your identifying the target met on that particular program, it seems to be very cold. But I know that there's a problem, hence he was suspended. So it means that we are not pinning down into real problems. Either we are there, but we are very scared, we're scared to hit the head, the nail on the head. Not, hence the question I was asking earlier that, the DG, AG, are you for protecting public money, therefore you're not going to compromise your findings? We don't want to question your ability and your work that you do, but you cannot compromise yourself to an extent that where there are problems, you must be able to flag red. I don't see anything red yet. Even the 28%, I don't see anything that's supposed to be flag red. Say, hey, there's a danger here, and there's a serious danger. If I have not met my target, and I'm sitting, I've spent 12 billion rand. It can't be normal. It can't be normal, honorable members. I think it can't be normal. It can't be normal. So this exercise, Chair, I'm proposing that as we do this exercise with the AG, the department must be in too, so that they can hear and cross-question the AG in front of them again. So this thing that the department will come here and sit here and then we speak to the department, the AG does not say anything. You said they refuse to submit or to agree to give you certain documents. Someone will have to sit here today if the department is ready. And then someone will have to explain it. And will have to ask you that which documents that you wanted. And they must say that they must give reasons in front of you and everybody. We have to do it directly to them. And I think that the methodology that you use to audit this department will have to change.
to deal with infrastructure, you have to do quality or go in there looking at the money spent, the quality of the work that has been done. We have to do that because I understand that your general approach is the simplest way, like auditing a starter shop, you know, how many tins of condens are there, how many candles are there, how many boxes of matches are there. But here we'll have to go and verify this information. I made that proposal last time when we met at that hotel, at the restaurant. What hotel is that, where we had good lunch there. I made that proposal. You need to really consider. And I'm happy to share that you have identified 10 projects. But there are many projects. The department at some point was running over 600 projects at the go. Hence the issue of construction unit comes in. And those projects, no one knows about those projects. And we are told that there are more than 600 projects that are running in the department. Now, you may want to share with us again with regards to your implementing agency, this water board. How far are you with regards to taking them over and auditing them? Because they don't comply with PFMA, all of them, by the way. I know that there's Hamahara, what is that, whatever Hamahara project, which is 16 billion rand, is being given to some water board. No capacity, there's nothing there. You know, these are things that I thought that you will be able to really take us with confidence, share with us, and really zoom into. You must be able to say we're seeing a problem here. My problem is that, Chair, I don't pick up, well, yes, we are saying it, but I know that you don't want to make members of parliament be angry. Make us angry. Say the right thing. Make us angry so that we can then be able to do oversight and a proper oversight and hold the executive accountable. In the absence of the Director General and then everybody, the Minister takes responsibility. The Minister of the Department takes responsibility of the kind of mismanagement that is happening there. So we'll have to hold the accountable. You'll have to appear, you'll have to account on some of these things that are happening in that department. So those are my comments, Chair, with some few questions that I've thrown in. But I think we have to zoom our energy to Program 3. We'll have to put a lot of energy there and really try. If we're to call for investigation as a committee, we'll have to call for that investigation and identify who must do that investigation, give them timelines, and they must come back and report to us. It's clear that state money is being stolen here. It's a fact. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chauke. The trend, members, or I saw your hand, Apollo. The trend, members, that is there is that we will have to formally write to the SIU to come and brief our committee on their investigation. As to the form that will take that. That's a different matter altogether. If it is to be a matter that is dealt with in private, the processes in Parliament have to follow. If we all, I'm sure we all know that it takes process of applying to the Speaker and the Speaker to allow us to have such a session on camera. Okay, Mr. Lukalo, before I come.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm covered by the previous speaker's chair that at times we need to take a stand as a portfolio committee. Otherwise, it would seem as if we are playing boardroom politics. That would be unfair to the public, the people whom we are representing here. It is common knowledge, Honorable Chair, that poor planning, poor program management, poor monitoring and evaluation of procurement processes sits at the very heart of our problem. The department is uncoordinated, Chair. It has fragmented internal controls and systems. And I suspect, Chair, that might be deliberate. Because in my view, the department is largely infested by microbes of the state if it is not captured. In terms of the Auditor General's report 2016-17 financial year, the department failed to take effective steps to prevent unauthorized expenditure. Now, what I want, or I would want to understand from the AG, they are saying unauthorized expenditure, your slide 21. Unauthorized expenditure was not qualified. However, it contributed to the material uncertainty ongoing concern reported. I want to understand that so that I'm schooled, because your presentations sometimes are too academic. Now my question would be, what is the relevance of the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation if its reports and recommendations to the President are not implemented? Shouldn't the DPME and the Office of the Auditor General have a service legal agreement through which the conduct of government departments can be tackled collaboratively by these entities with a view to ensuring that their joint reports are treated as serious as that required or requiring urgent attention from the law enforcement agencies, which is why I said I'm covered by the fact that the portfolio committee is something which I think is also being supported by the SG, that we have to write direct now to the SIU as the portfolio committee, because here I want to assume that we are part of the legislators, we are lawmakers, we are policy makers. We cannot sit here day in, day out, listening to the in the presentations by the AG, the Office of the Treasury, so on and so forth, and we end up doing nothing. We are failing these poor masses outside today because some areas, as we speak, as we are seated here, they don't have water. But there's a lot of taxpayers' money which is being squandered, and we know that, being squandered by certain individuals in this department. I'm glad, Chairperson, that we are taking this kind of a position
to write to the FIU, Special Investigative Unit. Somebody must be arrested immediately. Whether it's the Minister, Director General, whomever, somebody must account. Thank you very much.
You can take mine.
Mom, call her.
Ngibonge sihlalo ngibonge nale-presentation engiyitholayo. Although Honorable Basondwe okunye sevele wakuthatha emqondweni nami bese ngiyibhale phana. Mina-ke ngilana ku-slide 18 la kukhulunywa khona lakhulwa khona sihlalo ngemali etholakala usebenze ngokomthetho. Sihlalo, ngifisa ukwazi ukuthi ingabe umnyango waka-AG iyaya yini kumasayithi emsebenzi la kusuke kusetshenzwa, ngoba uma kubheka lo mnyango ulahlekelwe ngu-89 million overdraft nango-194 million kanye nemali esetshenziswa ezinye esetshenziselwe ezinye izinto elinganiselwa ku-406 million enyakeni ophelile kule kuyolo nyaka ngo-March 31 slide 18 ngicela niyibukisise leyona. Nokuthi mase kunezikweletu sekusekufika lana ey'kweletini ezingale kwempahla ofana ngathi isetshele ezingango-4-5 million ngempela ngempela, and ma uthi ayilalela le nsizwe laphakathi ngiyela kuyona ngqo ikhombisa okukhulu ukuhlakanethi ongaze babona uma ngabe ikhuluma sibe nethemba, especially thina njengobahlezi la, ikakhulu njengoba sihlaleli la bantu. Nami ngizobuya ngizoshayela isipikili la ku-honorable losanda ukukhuluma. If uma ubheka lezi zimali ey'khombisa ukuthi befanele ziyosebenza kwenye indawo zangasebenza kuyona zahamba zayosebenza kwenye indawo, wena njengoba u-AG njena akutshela ukuthi zisebenze ngokusemthethweni while our people still are suffering abanawo amanzi phansi. Njengoba siphuma kuma-research kunzima emphakathini, abantu abanawo mangazi yonke indawo, mina ngizokwazi ukuthi ngempela baboshwanini la bantu abakwazi ukuthi bathathe izimali zabakho kubentela bayise la bethanda khona. Ngiyabonga.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, and Honorable Basson has largely covered some of the stuff that I wanted to, you know, ventilate to the AG's office. Chairperson, I just wish to know as to whether the AG's office doesn't make time or take the trouble to conduct physical inspection in local, to go to these sites to check whether the money that is being used does it correlate with the work that is supposed to be done. Chairperson, it doesn't make sense that the department can incur a net loss of 89 million, overdraft of 194 million, unauthorized expenditure of 406 million, and liabilities that exceed the total assets by 454 million. You have more fully spoken, and I would like to hear from you as to what is your view if you look at the work that is to be done and the money that is being spent. So basically, Chairperson, that's all. Thanks.
Okay, Mrs. Mukhaba. Thank you, Chairperson. One thing, I think some other members have already alluded to a lot of political things that need clarity. The issue here is, I just want to understand on the issue of audit outcomes. Of the audit opinion, because you did mention the issue of asset register. I don't know whether I did get it clearly to say if the project is still in progress and there comes a time for the reporting, then if the outcome is qualified and the project is still in progress. Let's say, for instance, if the project has been planned for 10 years and for 16, 17, that project is qualified, is it still going to be qualified in 5-6 years to come since that project is planned for a long period, or the audit outcome is going to change?
Yes, please.
Less than a minute.
Yeah. Great. Slide 40, please, Chair. The expenditure. The budgeted amount, the spent amount, and the percentage spending. I'm just creating that because the spent amount is actually more than the budgeted amount. So the percentage should be 100.7 because we know they've overspent, but this is indicating an underspending. It's actually an overspend. So I think that percentage is incorrect, yeah. If you could just check that. Slide 14, if you look at your budgeted amount and your spent amount, if you could just tell us what the actual... I had written about an investigation and many of these amounts and things that have been qualified here are saying due to drought intervention. Now, I'd asked for that report, AD to do an investigation, and they did confirm at the previous meeting that they are busy with that investigation into the total drought expenditure. If we could get some indication of that, please. Thank you.
You can take mine, sir.
You
can take mine, you asked them about the litigation. They've never said anything.
Okay. Investigations. I'll check three very quick ones. Four. One talks to the debt collection. I've heard you talking about the payables and receivables. You have a company that is the sole company that is doing the debt collection for the department. The term was concluded on the 18th of February, effective on the 1st of April 2015, 18th of February 2014, and this contract is expected to end on the 15th of April 2018. They are in an agreement on a commission of 11.5 on recovery of any debt. Is that the norm? 11.5. If you can comment on that, that you have that company being the sole company. This is a company expected to recover $9 billion, if I'm not mistaken. The second one is the War on Leaks program. As far as I'm concerned, that is not on your APP. In other words, it's an unfunded mandate. Currently, as we speak now, those that have been trained, they continue to earn stipends. If I'm not mistaken, a budget of about 1.4 billion rand. Not a budget, but a figure of 1.4 billion rand since been spent. What is the status, in your understanding, of Ukraine William Dam? There have been some money spent over a certain time until at least today. The project was expected to be done by construction units. It has since been addressed. You see somewhere in your report there that says it is awaiting a private outsourcing process. But as we speak now, monies are spent almost close to 18 million rand
and yet there is nothing happening in the project itself. And the status of that project, as far, from where you are seated, are you going to raise the wall there? The latest I'm gathering that with the defect that you have on that dam, you are literally expected here to redo the entire wall out of that dam. Not just raising the dam, but rather the wall per se. The point you were making reference to with regard to GCPA and the assets that are in the asset book of WTE. I did take an interest on that as to the viability of such and whether or not a different scenario existed wherein you were to have those assets on the asset book of your TCTA. As they go out in the capital market, they leverage on that asset to really get cheaper, if you like, funding. As we speak today, it's mainly based on guarantees, whatever they go out there to borrow. If you can express a view of that. Because you want to deal here with a sustainable situation that talks to getting cheaper money as you are to find yourself in a situation where you source electricity that funding in pursuance of all of these projects that they are dealing with. Let us allow the AG's office to respond to the myriad number of questions. I saw that they're very efficient and they've been taking notes. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members, for the question. Again, we'll follow the same approach where we'll answer the questions and assist each other as and when they arrive. And maybe it will be worthwhile noting that two things. If and when we answer certain questions, we feel that maybe some questions, the answers overlap with certain questions. But if members feel that not all questions have been responded to, maybe we propose in the interest of time that we get those questions again and then we can respond to them on a formal basis. But I'm going to hand over to Stephen, who will deal with three or four technical issues, and then we'll move over as and when we proceed to jump into the chair.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Thanks, Honourable Members. Again, you did not disappoint. I told my colleagues we have to get the best pens and extensive paper so we can take notes, because when the questions come, they always come in a flash. Honourable Chair, Honourable Member, I'm going to take a few questions on the value for money that Honourable Basson had asked. The question was more around what happened with this money that actually was not spent on Program 3. As we can see that the indicators within the APR indicates that they have achieved a lower. I think, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, we have highlighted a couple of the things that took some of the money that was intended in there. We mentioned, for example, that there are projects that they are doing that we have reviewed within the project, the 10 projects that we did where there was no budget allocation. So where there's no budget allocation already, when you spend on that project, you're spending money that was never planned or allocated in that project. So you're taking away from some of the projects that you had budgeted for, you're spending it in one of these projects that were not budgeted. Secondly, Honourable Chair, in our engagements with our engineers, they raised an interesting thing that there's quite delays within period of time that the department initiates a project and completes a project. And then is that generally in those delays, you would find that prices starts to increase and double up as you delay to actually complete that project. So there's delays generally. If you look at the example for the 10 projects that we had highlighted and picked,
you will see that we included intentionally initial date there, so that we can point to the fact that some of these projects ought to have been completed already, but are still running. And the moment you have that, you start incurring costs that you had not planned to incur, and the increases in the prices due to inflation and so forth. We have also highlighted, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that there are projects that are only coming now into the APP, which spending has already been done. So there has been consistent spending on projects that are not necessarily being accounted for in that far column we record the APR. The other thing is there are other projects that the entity together with the department went into. Honorable Chair, you raised the question around War on Leaks. War on Leaks is one of those projects that we said, why are we undertaking War on Leaks? Where was War on Leaks budgeted for? Why is it taking so much money out of what you had initially planned? Because if you're going to spend this lots of money on War on Leaks and that was not budgeted for, you are taking that money from somewhere. We have another project that's almost similar to War on Leaks that was under two, that is Drop a Block, and a program project as well that they took on, which is called Drop a Block as well. That Drop a Block was not budgeted for, but it is incurring quite substantial amount of money. We have, again, this IT system that we said was procured on behalf of municipalities and the water boards, which the budget was not allocated for, but they spent that money on those systems. So if you start looking at accumulating those types of...
If you can also be specific in terms of figures, so that we are assisted going forward.
Okay, Honorable Chair, I have the figures. I realize that my laptop has died. As my members take the other questions, I'll just walk across and switch it on. But if you look at, for example, the one where they procured the system, they procured the system at about 450 million. Yes, yes, Honorable Chair.
No, I'm saying that. I was going to say SAP. Yes. That has escalated into a billion rand.
So on the others, like on War on Leaks.
No, that's fine, Chair. It's a point you're running away from.
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. Then I will give the other figures as soon as I switch it on. Wherever we don't have the full figure, we'll make sure that we provide the committee with the total figure around that. Honorable Baker asked questions around the change in the transfer. What was the rationale around the change in the transfer? You would appreciate, Honorable Member, that the department has been constantly being qualified around approvals and commitment. It was a song that we were singing almost year in, year out. And particularly because those were done at implementing agents. And these are the monies where they had to do this construction and then hand it over. So what they had thought this would address was to say, if they now have it as a direct transfer, it would result in them just transferring money over to those guys who are already in any case implementing some of those projects. And it would take away the approvals as well as commitment qualifications and other requirements. And that proved to be a challenge, again, as we had already highlighted, that you are transferring some of the things that you already have work in progress on, that you already have commitments on, that you already have accruals on. You can't just transfer the funds going forward. You have to deal with the balances that you already have now on the working progress, on accruals, as well as on commitments that you do. So the rationale from their side was that it will address their consistent qualifications around commitment and accruals.
And then, Chairperson, honourable members, there's also a sentiment that was shared with regards to the liquidity of the WTE and then the impact it has on the TCT. I think Honourable Basson and Honourable Chairperson raised it. Honourable Chairperson, from our point of view, our message was quite simple in the sense that it already poses liquidity problems by having this overdraft, and because TCTA is required to collect money, the receivable in terms of the liability that is owed, like Stephen made the example, it will directly impact on TCTA. But that assessment has to be done by management in terms of how to deal with that going forward. So the long and short of it is WTE and water and sanitation portfolio does not have money to pay over the money that the liability that it owes on TCTA. So that will directly impact TCTA. As far as the more technical discussion is concerned around the funding arrangement, I think it also directly impacts on the funding arrangement, because whether you have an asset of assets which are generating income from, or you have an asset of people owing you money, at least you still have an asset which you can leverage in terms of your funding when you request funding. But now the problem is this asset, because of the nature of the asset that you have, this one you have the tangible item, you have the infrastructure that's lying in your books, but this one you just have the people or the debt that's lying against your books. Irrecoverability also therefore impacts on that arrangement. And again, we can't propose or recommend which funding model should be engaged in this aspect. Because as you change the funding model for TCTA, it also has an impact on WTE. As soon as you assume the asset to TCTA, what asset is WTE then going to use as a basis for providing services? It's also interlinked with, I'm using this so that I can provide the service. It will also impact their accounting at the WTA level as well. But the long and short of it is that it does impact on TCTA. We haven't seen the actual impact this year because we only started providing for those debtors, so probably we'll see a bigger impact in the current year, but that still remains to be seen. And then there was another question on the Section 38 responsibilities and the ability to recover. From where we are standing at Office of the AG, we've reported the instances that have not been complied with from a PFMA point of view. The accountability aspect thereof has to be taken forward by the principal. It becomes a principal versus a line supervisor arrangement. There's a performance contract in place, so how is that person's performance assessment and performance agreement done at the end of the year? And did the person then, is it said that this person has performed in line with what we have agreed that I will deliver up front? And more often than not, in accounting of those places, it is linked to the PFMA. So if the PFMA is a non-compliant instance, then maybe inference can be drawn from there that there are shortcomings in terms of performance, but we can't assess because we don't assess performance in this regard. It's a line manager's and direct report relationship. As far as the funds from recovery point of view, again, PFMA is quite clear in that. What we found in certain environments is that certain entities will sit and say, I'm conducting the investigation to determine the root cause. Because yes, we acknowledge certain things will go wrong because of oversight or lack of understanding, there was no malicious intent or derelict of duties. But you first have to determine what is the root cause of that non-compliance or transgression that was incurred. It's a requirement within the PFMA. Once you determine the root cause, then you must take appropriate action. So again, because we're not part of that, it becomes a labor aspect again that management has to undertake. I think you will be well within your right to answer the question of management. And I think that answers also in terms of who to hold accountable. We can't take the CFO with the DG. All we know, and then you'll see even our report, it refers to the accounting officer because the public, the PFMA says the accounting officer. And then the department will have delegations, the accounting officer is delegated to whichever official to deal with certain aspects of their environment to make sure that everything is implemented accordingly. So again, that in terms of who to hold accountable will be driven by the delegations, etc., applicable in their environment. And then, there was projects under investigation, and all bodies investigating, but no outcome. The dispute resolution process, we would be quite hard-pressed to give a formal, I don't want to commit to a date and say end of October, but I can confirm that it's at quite an advanced stage where Mrs. Miller has confirmed that some of our work has gone through a quality review process. It's now a matter of bringing the department together, sharing them and making them understand whether we, you know, what's the outcome of that process. And once that outcome of that process is concerned, then further actions will be taken. I don't know, and the reason I'm also scared to give and commit to a specific date is because there was legal action that was also threatened by the service provided in this environment by some of the implementing agents as well. So from that point of view, we first have to finalize the dispute resolution on the outcomes, and once the outcomes are finalized, or that dispute resolution process is finalized, then we'll see, because currently I know that the legal process has been halted while the dispute resolution takes place. Mrs. Milner said we must commit to end of October, but I'm not going to commit to end of October. We will let this process unfold, but it is really advanced and taking place. There's double invoicing. There's a question from Honorable Makande on the double invoicing. We can't say whether it's prevalent or happens if all the time or not all the time, because we've done we do a sample basis. But based on the samples we've picked up, we've assessed that there are a number of them where double invoicing is taking place, and it's a risk that we've highlighted to management. But it's not just the double invoicing that takes place. We've also raised an issue that we've got as part of the project in the feedback, that over and above the double invoicing, there's also a risk that you've got too many role players who are doing project management. So the consulting fees, the top slicing takes quite a bit. So if you have a project that you're supposed to be implementing for 100, instead of spending 90% of that money you're spending on the actual infrastructure, you may be spending less because of all the project management. There's a project management implementing agent, there's a project manager, and you appoint another project manager to check the project manager. So those are some of the risks. Those are some of the risks we are highlighting that requires management to go and follow up. So management needs to sit down and say, I've spent 100 days. If I look at the project manager, what value am I getting for this process? What value is the project manager adding in this environment?
I just think what I would like to add, because I'm just made a number of really valid comments, and it brings us back to also to a question to say, why only 10 projects? Why can't we do more? This is serious cost factors to this audit, because we use specialists. We as auditors can look at the dam or look at the reservoir, and we're not in a position to make technical assessments. So we use specialists as part of our methodology. Last year we just skimmed the surface. This year we intentionally took 10 projects to look at. So it's important that now management takes the 10 projects and go deal with our findings, because it needs to have an impact on the accountability at department level. So what we're going to do next year, we're going to go back to this text and determine to what extent our findings have been addressed. Because that's where management assurance must first get to the required standard. We can do 100 and give you the same value as the 10. So it's very important that management now takes this 10 serious and go and implement corrective action around it. Maybe if I can also link to the projects. I don't know whether you are aware, but we're in the process now to propose legislation changes to our own act to give us more power in terms of consequence management. Mm. That process is in an advanced stage that our recommendation has now been handed over to SCOAC, and SCOAC will now drive the process of getting the legislation changed. But one of the criteria we anticipate it will have is to identify not only negative audit outcomes that should be referred for investigation, but also certain projects. And the projects that we've identified in our presentation where we say forensic investigation is recommended would ideally be forming part of those referrals. In the absence of that happening yet, I am pleading with the department and with the portfolio committee that some referral needs to happen around these projects. We have definitely picked up a number of red flags. It's now for investigators to go and look at these projects and determine the real extent of the problem.
Thank you. No, I need to, before I take this seat, the cabinet take this seat, and I was sharing, and I've not said anything, and I'm not going to allow him to speak yet. Chair, I wanted to make a recommendation and abuse my chair here. No, it's fine. I thought before you sit down, Chair, I'll use this privilege that I'm sharing on your behalf while you're still drinking tea. The IT project, this SAP, project. How deep have you gone into that, other than the issue of using the IT that entities are not using that IT? How far have you gone on the expenditure? Because I saw in the leaks, the email leaks, the SAP comes very prominent. I'm not talking of the leaks that will go to the state capture and all that. We have a responsibility in the committee to reflect on that fact. Have you gone deeper in looking to that particular system? How much was spent? I know for now we know it's 400 million wasted. But my understanding is that the money is in fact above billion rand. Have you looked at that?
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We have looked at this IT system. It has three folds, Honorable Chair. One fold is in 1816, the entity renewed their own license, which they are using. So there's one element where they just review, renewed the licenses on the one that they're using, and then two, they have now this one that they procured on behalf of the water boards as well as on municipalities. And then there is one that is of a maintenance that is also running. That maintenance is supposed to service both the entity and this new one that is that will be used. So we reviewed all these three. So on all these three, the first one was fine where they were renewing for themselves. The second one, which they were now buying for the entities, we had a problem, we had a challenge with that. So we declared it irregular because we said, one, they did not go through CETA. Two, they did not do a due diligence before they could even procure the services. Once they had procured the services, only then they started soliciting the other water boards and the municipalities to use the system. So it had quite a couple of things that highlighted irregularities, and then also the fact that no water board, no municipality was using it resulted in it starting to draw fruitless and wasteful expenditures. So that one was irregular. Also the maintenance element of it became irregular expenditure, but for that maintenance, because they still have one which they are supporting, we didn't regard it as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But as soon as this one does not come through, we said what we then need to do with management is identify reasonably which portion should be servicing the entity's own and which portion should be servicing the water board and the municipalities, as an element of it might become I think that's the extent of our
So what shares to you, that's my last point. What does the PFMA say about the fruitless and wasteful experience? What do you expect that to happen? What is it? And who's supposed to take who's not supposed to implement those legislative requirements of how you deal with fruitless and wasteful experience? And this question, I'm going to repeat it in front of the Director General at some point. But for now, for purposes of clarity, what does it say? Who must do it?
The good question pops up again. I think if one considers I think section one of the PFMA says irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, unauthorized, any types of expenditure. If any institutional entity or department incurs that type of expenditure, there must be an investigation done to determine the root cause. Once you determine the root cause, then you must take disciplinary action against employees who have committed irregular, unauthorized, or fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And unfortunately, not unfortunately, it is like I mentioned earlier on, when you look at the PFMA is geared to say the accounting officer shall take action against, or action shall be taken, and it implies that it's the accounting officer, because the accounting officer is entrusted with the administration and financial affairs of the department.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Okay. So can I give you, Chair, there were three or four items. I think you just want to...
If you can do that, what are the members which you... apart from keeping files, we shall have to follow up on a number of those other questions with the department. The department shall still come here. We shall still be having the Office of the Auditor General here with us.
Yes.
We shall equally be expected to engage with the department here.
Yeah.
So we have a committee week this week. We are here until October. Straight to the point on those four areas.
Okay, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Chauke, you asked about the construction unit.
Yes.
In future, you only speak to the chair.
Yeah. Don't talk to Chauke.
Whether he's listening or not, he can equally be chased out of the meeting. If he doesn't want, we'll call the council.
So you're getting rough on the wrong person. You must bring the department.
My apologies, Honorable Chair. The construction unit is within WGE. Its intention was to actually be the one that are implementing Project 3. Mm-hmm. So wherever there's any construction that needed to happen was supposed to be implemented by a construction unit.
Mm-hmm.
I think they are experiencing, this management has raised concerns around the capacity that they have within the construction unit. Has some and most of them big projects that they are undertaking, they are actually utilizing either TCCA or they are utilizing the other external parties to do the construction. Now, Honorable Chauke, Chair, do you check? Honorable Chauke asked about the water boards, whether we're taking them back. We have actually taken them. We're currently running the audit, and all water boards for this 16-17 are being audited by the Office of the Water General.
All of them,
Chair.
And the CMA?
No, not the catchment management agency. The CMAs are still being done outside, but it's a page that...
Dr. Dela, Minister. Thank you.
Thank you, John. The chief. Okay. So then there was a question on the accrual. Shall I go back with you again? The accruals, the balance, I think the balance that Honorable Basson is looking at is the balance at the first end of the first quarter, and we also have an increase. Did they say that the one is the 31st of March?
Yeah.
The one that we have, the one that we've ordered that is in the annual report is 600 or some odd million. And what we say in the audit report as well is of that portion, over 500 of it relates to more than 30 days. So we just have to follow up in terms of that, why they submitted different figures. Because that's also worrisome for us. We thought maybe it's the quarter, it's advanced and an increase. And then there was the double invoicing we dealt with, the budget process. I think the long and short of it is,
part of the dispute that's been raised. So once we resolve that matter, we will be able to give you the very specifics.
Okay, and then there was an issue on the chairperson raised on the Clan William Dam as well in terms of the spending that happened and now having to go back and redo everything. Again, we are not infrastructure specialists, but it's indicative of poor planning. Because if you know you are going to embark on a project and you understand your scope of work, you need to first go to the site, understand what it is, gather the intel and see, am I just limited to, or is there more work that's going to be done? We do appreciate that, you know, certain projects you start with something and as you go in you realize the rock is more, the internal, you need to redo certain things. But from this one, before the raising was undertaken, maybe better planning could have been engaged in, and I think that's also with regard to the comment that was made overall.
Chairperson, can I ask a question on the Clam Lane?
That's not what happened there.
The construction unit was on site. There's nothing wrong with the design.
Mm.
The minister only took a decision to withdraw them and go out on tender, and now that's costing us 3 billion rand.
Yeah,
the recommend, it's got nothing to do with planning. The planning was done in 2013. They were appointed in December 2013. They were on site and just the minister just took the decision to withdraw them. There are still people staying there costing us 2.5 million rand a month on site. So it's not poor planning. It's just unfortunate now that the contractors...
What I would want us to do, members, my dear, you're getting a whole range of feedback from that 10 million there. They are different. The latest I'm getting is as far as being truthful. That wall will have to be restarted from scratch, which talks to the design. So I would want us to, part of our program, to plan an oversight with that.
I was there last year.
You were there last year. So that we go there and literally speak to whoever who is involved, who has been involved in that. It's quite a very critical one because the cost runs into that. The cost, not what we hear. This, I'm gathering a scenario wherein there's going to be a serious review of the cost insofar as that is concerned. But it is a major issue. Let's get to those details. But we can get some information now, but I would really urge us that we find time and go out there and begin the process of an oversight visit. Come back. Yes, we are not engineers, but at least some of the things you can see with your own eyes. And so this is what is happening here now. Is this war still to be raised? Or do you have to study from scratch? All of those details. That's what I'm asking.
Chairperson, can I have a last bite on this? You recall I asked to go to oversight there, and then it was denied by the minister.
Mm-hmm.
With Margaret Ann was still in DG. Eventually, they arranged 16 people from Victoria to come and do a presentation to me on the site. There's nothing wrong with it. Been there in March again this year. Nothing wrong with the construction of the current Cambrian dam. But I agree with you, let's go into the investigation. Chairperson was never stopped because of that. It was stopped because the Margaret and Richards took away the mandate to the procurement of material. And then they set them up for failure, and then the minister said, let's go out on tender.
Okay, conclude, if you don't mind.
Yeah. All right, thank you, Chair. I think...
No preambles, yeah. No introduction.
Okay, Chair. Honorable Kola Mankola asked on the slide about youth welfare. I think we've explained that the funds have been used for the war on the leaks on the dropper block in that regard. So that's why the unauthorized. And then the physical inspection, yes, we do go and do the physical inspection at the project. I think currently the project that we have visited has indicated we've got a problem with the costing thereof, not necessarily whether the project is not on the ground. So some of the projects you've seen are there, it's just the costing element in terms of a value for money point of view. And then there was something on the qualified opinion. If you have a qualified opinion in the current year, what is the impact in the following year? It depends on a case-by-case basis and it depends on what the issue was. So if you have irregular expenditure in a particular project, as long as you keep incurring, you will still keep on having irregular expenditure.
what is the qualification or not depends on how well management accounts for it or discloses for it in the financial statement. So you can have a regular expenditure as long as Bonnet they disclose it properly in the financial statement to say on this project it's a regular expenditure and they disclose everything completely. It may not necessarily result in a qualification, but the irregular expenditure may continue to be incurred if it's a multi-year project. So that has to be assessed on a case-by-case basis in terms of the impact and what the shortcomings were on that. Then Honourable Baker made a comment. In terms of the investigation on the drought relief, so we have received the request as indicated. Our office is busy with the assessment, but prior to us undertaking investigations, it has to be approved by the AG himself, and we have to do the preliminary assessment to see if it warrants an investigation. So we are busy with that process and gathering all sorts of information to see and determine what the impact is going to be. And based on that process, then the AG will apply his mind and decide whether he's approving the recommendation to do an investigation or not, and then formally communicate that process.
And we also need to add, received additional requests as well, so we're considering them all as one because they were subsequently placed by other institutions as well.
Which also implicated other departments as well, which was also narrowly linked to the sector.
Last comment, Chair, on financial health. My recommendation is that you ask the department for a recovery plan with the very specific milestones on how are they going to make sure that they improve the situation where they're in. Because we know the fiscus is under strain. Yeah. So we've got it in our recommendations as well. We say ask them for a plan and then monitor that plan. But they must come with very detailed monitoring. It cannot just be an overall, we're on track. It needs to be, the plan must be very specific in terms of how are they going to enhance expenditure and enhance revenue and curb expenditure? Because the accruals, the overdraft must all be funded from current budget. So it's important that they determine how are they going to do it to get out of the situation they're in. Thank you, Chair.
At this juncture, members, I shall first that we take a break that shall take us back here at 1:15. I shall ask that we take a break that shall take us back at 1:15. And having done so, it shall then mean that I think that shall take us a bit of time to rearrange how we're going to be seated. There is food, I'm told, at the back there. Is that correct, Sharon? And then we allow the department to come before us. It's a working progress process.
Can I ask a question?
I'd like to ask a